Hello and welcome to The Thing About Cars. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. Around the table, my co-hosts are Dawn. How are you, Dawn?
I am beautiful.
You are beautiful. Dave is also beautiful. How are you, Dave?
Quite well, yeah. I was feeling a little fetching before you said that, but I'll accept beautiful.
Beautiful is that's the way to go.
I think I have a little shine.
Firmly implanted into the awesomely beautiful category, we've got Misty. How are you, Misty?
I am fabulous.
You are fabulous. And last but certainly not least, sparkling in all his resplendent glory is Ben. Ben, how are you?
I don't think I've ever sparkled before, but I'm well.
I'm glad you guys are here. Our special guest for the day, Steffi Kuntz. How are you, Steffi?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you for joining us today. I know we're going to have a lot to talk about, but I wanted to do our... Wait, you know what? It's Tim Rogers' birthday today.
Yes, it is.
Our friend Tim, trivia czar Tim. You know, I wonder what he's doing today. What do you guys think Tim is up to today?
Cake?
Cake seems like a given. I'm hoping he's doing something colorful and wacky, like, I don't know, like...
Our show?
drinking early, exactly. Day drinking or sitting around the backyard with some sort of hard lemonade with his feet in the kiddie pool. Maybe that's what Tim's doing.
My gut says he's mowing his lawn, but I hope I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong. I hope you're wrong about that too, Tim. Whatever you're doing, we hope it's you know, nice and debaucherous and that you're having a good time with it, whatever it is. So, happy birthday, Tim, from all of us. And our guest, Steffi Kuntz. Steffi, we originally talked on the phone during our preliminary segment with a bunch of stuff to talk about. You have a long and varied history in the world of cars, don't you?
Yes, I've been into them since I was a kid and lots of hot rods over the years and worked in the car industry for about 30 years. But I think it might be more fun to talk about my hot rod cars I've had.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, before we pressed record, you were talking about a 1973 Honda Civic that you had modified, and I think Ben needs to hear this. Could you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, that was, I was working at Curry Honda, where it was a global Honda at the time, and it was back in the late 70s when Hondas were just coming into the country, and I decided I wanted to build a hot rod one. Everybody thought I was crazy because they had 45 horsepower or something went from the factory. They were pretty slow cars, and I knew that the old power to weight ratio thing could come into play on a car like that. So I picked a 73 trunk back model because that was pre 5 mile an hour bumpers. So it had a lighter frame and took the bumpers off, took the complete interior out of the car, gutted it, took all the sound deadening out of it, took the dash out of it. I mean, there was nothing except a steering wheel and a tachometer in the car. And took the stock engine, lightened the flywheel from, I think it was 22 pounds to 4 pounds.
Whoa.
Wow.
And yeah. Put some GL1000 motorcycle pistons in it that bumped the compression up to about 12 to 1 and went to Reed Cams to have them grind a cam for it. And I said, I want a cam that makes power from like 5 to 9,000 RPM. And, yeah. and they were like, you can't drive that on the street. And it's like, yeah, I can. Just grind a cam. And so they ground this huge freaking cam for it that the engine idled about $2,000, put some pulleys on it to slow down the alternator because the first time I went out and ran it, it blew the guts out of the alternator.
Oh, wow.
The motors would just turn RPM like crazy.
Sure.
And ported the head, put some motorcycle carbs on it, and found this place, RC Engineering, I think was the name of it. They made a race header for those cars that went out through the grill, the lower grill opening, and wrapped around the front of the car. And it was these weird 4-into-2 headers that paired oddball tubes. Usually they pair like 1 and 4 and 2 and 3, and it paired 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. And it had, had dual exhaust coming out of the side. Swear to God, it sounded like a CB350 Honda motorcycle.
Oh, and wow. We're only 4 minutes into the show, and I think this is already my favorite episode.
The car was just a rocket ship, and I used to go around like racing Camaros and Porsches and stuff because nobody could believe that a little Honda could outrun them. And you'd pull up next to them, rev up the engine, and they get all ready, and you'd pull them away from one stoplight to the next, and they'd pull up to the next stoplight and be like, you know, trans braking it, trying to really get a good launch because it was like, there's no way this little Honda Civic just beat my Camaro. And you'd have to beat them 2 or 3 times before they'd finally give up. Later in its life, I painted Porsche Eater on the side of it. It was a hilarious little car to drive around. It was hard to get out of the hole. That was one of the problems, because like most front wheel drive cars, but you know, they'd usually get me 10 or 15 feet off the line, and then I'd go by them with smoke rolling off the right front tire when I hit second gear. And it was a blast to drive.
So I have to ask.
Yeah. I have received a text message from our attorneys, Screech, Screech, Break, and Bang, to announce that we do not endorse street racing in Atlanta.
Right. No, no, we didn't. This was obviously not in Mexico.
Exactly.
We were not doing this in the United States. But the car before that I had, my dad was always into fast cars, and he bought a 68 442 Oldsmobile, brand new. And that was, I remember that from a kid. My dad would go out, you know, romping and stomping on that thing. And I think that started my love for hot rod cars. And I inherited that car from him. And of course, when we rebuilt it, gas juiced it up a little bit. But that was a fun car. Then I got into Datsun Z cars, the shop I worked at.
Wait a minute. Before we talk about the Datsun thing, because I know there's a lot to unpack there. Okay. What happened to the Civic?
Oh, it ended up in a junkyard. I mean, it got beat up, got rolled a couple of times. And, you know, there wasn't a whole lot left of it. The first time it rolled over, it didn't take too much damage. The second time kind of finished it off.
I see.
But anyway, the engine was getting pretty worn out too. An engine like that, turning that kind of RPM, you know, 15, 20,000 miles, it's going to be toast.
It's going to be toast. Exactly. So, all right. So Datsuns, let's talk Datsuns for sure.
So Datsuns. I've always loved, for people who don't know what I'm talking about, the 240, 280, 260Zs. You know, the 240s were kind of more of the pure sports car. I really like the 280s. I think the car had matured at that point. And maybe as I got a little older too, having an air conditioner that actually worked was a bonus. The 240Z air conditioners were just a joke, and they used those sorry York square cube vibration monster things. They just, you know, it was a terrible, terrible design air conditioner. So, and they fixed the windows, the door latches, just everything in the 280s seemed to work a lot better. They were a little heavier car, but, and I, from my understanding, those cars, that L28 was sort of like the small block Chevy of Japanese cars. And they were so overbuilt, you could make just crazy horsepower out of them. And with the stock cranking rods and stuff, would handle 400 or 500 horsepower without any problem. We did a lot of turbo cars. I know early on, Turbo Tom did some, you know, Z car stuff. And those were one of the cars that he really focused on doing, the Holley 4-barrel with the water injection thing. But we later, as programmable fuel injection came along, especially like those SDS systems and stuff like that, where you could put giant injectors in them and fuel inject them and use an intercooler, we were able to get 450 horsepower out of them pretty easy. Personal car is, I went normally aspirated, and Sunbelt Racing did the cylinder head. It's got a hand-built intake. It's got a diesel Maxima crankshaft with 240Z rods and 240SX pistons that made a 3.1 liter out of the 2.8.
Oh my goodness.
And it's got a pretty hot cam in it. It makes power from 4,000 to about 7,500. And the factory motors pretty much petered out about 5,500. So, you know, it really turns on the top end. So
you've squeezed a lot out of that car.
Right. And, you know, I've done some cool stuff with, there's tricks to like relocating the lower control arm pivots in the front that gets rid of the bump steer. And there's, you know, lots of little tricks over the years that people figured out on those cars that really makes them great hot rod cars.
Yeah. I know the others might have some questions here, but my first thought is, did you ever take these on the track, or was it always just in Mexico?
It was always in Mexico.
Okay. And the Nissan, I think, is starting to debut the 400Z. I didn't know if you were aware of that or had seen any part
Yes,
of it.
And I've seen pictures of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was, they really kind of went the retro look. Mm-hmm. And I want to circle back to one thing you mentioned about track racing. My track racing was on two-stroke go-karts. I don't know if y'all have ever seen those lay-down 120-mile-an-hour methanol-burning two-cycle. I raced those for about 10 years. And I was a regional champion over in the local tracks over in Alabama and Roebling Road and some other places. Hold the track record over at Little Talladega. Did a 58 and change lap over there, which outruns the 1,000cc superbikes.
Amazing. That's just amazing.
With a 100cc motor.
That must have been just an amazing rush, too, to be that low on the track.
Oh, you have no idea. That's like adrenaline-like. But anyway, that was my track experience. And I knew, any car I built wouldn't be able to keep up with my go-kart. So that was my racing stuff.
Oh, very cool. Anyone else? I mean, I know I think I interrupted somebody.
Oh, well, I'm just still kind of, tripping on the Civic thing because, I mean, my brother had one of those. His was a 74 or something, which he left completely stock. But what a fabulous little car. Even if you don't do any of that to it, it's still just a completely fabulous car. It may not be fast in stock form, but it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah,
they are.
What makes it fun, Ben? What would you say makes that thing fun?
Well, the small size makes it fairly agile, although, the small tires don't help that much. But it's just kind of a zippy little thing. You can dart in and out of traffic. You can park it easily. And of course, the one he had was bright yellow. Had a little roof rack that we referred to as the carrying handle since the car was so small. But it was just the most cheerful car ever. It was just a complete delight. We took road trips all over the Southeast in that thing. We carried, half of a band's gear in the back of it one time on one of those trips. And just super, super fun. Kind of car you can't help but to smile when you drive.
Right. Well, I've still got a 77 1200 Civic in my carport that's awesome. All restored. And it's pretty much stock. It's got like a Weber carburetor on it and a mild cam, but it's still pretty stock. It's not.
Yeah.
When you go out and drive them, it's the closest thing, because I ride motorcycles too. It's the closest thing to riding a motorcycle that has on four wheels.
Nice.
It really is. It's so light and nimble, and just the steering's so light. And I think part of what made them fun, especially the little 1200s, was the aluminum motor, and they had a 493 ring and pinion in them, which is really low gear ratio for anything.
Why am I think that's having visions of a remote show with Ben and Steffi and Ricky Rackman doing a motorcycle tour through Helen and Hiawassee?
I'll bring my 900 Ducati Monster. We'll have some fun.
Awesome.
You are reading my mind, Misty. We need to get together and do some of this.
Or Steffi and Ben. And then you have to, of course, bring Ricky over and we do a remote show at ASA for the TT.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Because what's Steffi, do you know that most of us are in or around Atlanta and Misty's overseas?
No, I didn't. And when she said Euro, that kind of, I think there must be where she's at.
Yeah.
But sure.
So the funny thing is, the funny thing is usually, I'm the only person located quote unquote abroad, but I'm also usually the only person that's actually native Georgian born.
Yeah. That's the other part of that.
That's me.
We had to go all the way to the Netherlands to find one.
Yeah. I'm originally from Raven County. So
Steffi's also a Georgian native, but Misty gets to hang out with the Dutch. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
Probably the last little cool story or something I'm really proud of is about 10 years ago, I did a cross country motorcycle trip on a 500 Ninja Kawasaki and rode it from Atlanta to the West Coast, 10,000 miles, 6 week road trip on the little 500 twin Kawasaki. And amazing. Man, what a blast that was.
Yeah.
Well, people thought I was crazy. They'd go, "You did not ride that thing out here from Georgia." When they see the tag, it's like, "Yeah, I did." And still love that bike. That's a fun little bike.
Well, Steffi, it's clear that we need to have you back on the show again and again, because there's going to be plenty more to talk about. But first, I wanted to ask you some standard questions that we ask of all our guests.
Okay.
Three standard questions, and then the fourth one is something whimsical and silly. But first one, number one, what is your dream car?
Ooh, it might be that 400Z if they do it right.
Yeah.
I mean, I drove a 370 and it just didn't.
It looks very compelling, the 400Z.
It does, if they do it right.
We have a friend who loves his 370. He loves it, drives it everywhere. It's his daily driver, and he loves it. But I need to talk to him about the 400 as well. Question number two, Steffi, is where is your next road trip?
Probably up to the Badlands. That's a place I've wanted to just get in the car and just head that direction. And I'm the kind of person, when I do a road trip, it's like there's no planning, and I hate getting on the interstate. I want to take two lane back road. I mean, that bike trip I was talking about, no interstate. It was all two lane.
Yeah.
Across the country. So that's the only way to really see things, I think.
I think I agree. That's very cool.
Yeah, 100% agree on that.
Question number three, what's the most fascinating thing you've seen either on the road or in someone's garage?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I guess probably one of the coolest cars was a friend of mine's got an old Datsun 510. There was a Turbo Tom car that got the old Holley four barrel thing on it, and the car is just stupid fast. And it's just a little shoebox looking car that'll just do burnouts for miles. You know, like
those were great. They actually underneath the skin, the 510 was kind of a ripoff of the BMW 1600 in almost every detail. I had one in high school. It was a snot green four door, and boy, was it fun to drive.
Yeah, I had one years ago, a little two door that had the triple S motor in it, and that was a fun little car.
Fantastic. Last question. Forgive me in advance for this one. What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever worn?
Ooh. Dave is like, embarrassing thing I've ever worn.
I'm so glad you've never asked me this question.
probably the shorts and the shirt I was wearing yesterday with the 20 pounds I've put on from COVID. That was, I saw some pictures and just went, oh my God, I got to lose some weight.
I'm feeling personally attacked by this answer.
I'm in this picture and I don't like it.
Thank you, Steffi. This is good stuff. And I hope you'll stick around for the rest of the show and chime in on our discussion. And we really would welcome you back at any time you feel like joining us. I think this is.
Oh, sure. We've got some good. Probably got some good stories from down in Mexico.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
the thing I neglected to do earlier was to ask our trivia question for the day. So let's have a moment of Grand Trivia Auto, shall we?
That's like saying, let's have a moment of silence.
Let's have a moment of silence.
we will be having a moment of silence in a little bit.
In a bit, yeah. So this question does not come from our trivia czar, Tim, who hopefully is also in Mexico at the moment. But this comes from our friend Mark Rosin. Mark writes, which country has a coast-to-coast Highway 66? And the choices are, is that England, Italy, Finland, or Japan? Which country has a coast-to-coast Highway 66? That Japan, Finland, Italy, or England? We'll answer that at the end of the show. In the meantime, Ben has a segment called The New Car Smell. Take it away, Ben.
Yeah, well, there's not a whole lot of new car smell going on right now because production has been down for quite a while. And this is basically COVID-related, although not always in a direct way. The thing we've been hearing about in the news quite a bit is the computer chip shortage that has caused some assembly lines to take some protracted pauses. But that is actually at its root COVID-related because, well, first of all, when everybody got quarantined and sick and all that, they really slowed down on buying cars. So the automakers didn't need as many parts and raw materials and things. Their suppliers then turned away from making the automotive chips and turned toward making other things just in time too, because with everybody remote working and kids remote schooling, there was a booming market for computers and related hardware. So the chip makers now are having to catch up. And yeah, this goes back to the beginning of the whole mess and they still haven't caught up yet. And of course, car demand as the economy's improving is going up regardless of the chip situation. And so the whole thing is a mess, and it may take quite a while for all of these associated industries to catch up. Now, someplace that I've been noticing the new car shortage is in the rental car fleet. Of course, as you know, some of our listeners know, I drive rental cars just about every week for my day job.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah, and the selection has been getting thinner and thinner, and I'm noticing that the cars are, you know, older and a little more high mileage than they used to be. In fact, the other week I went through New Orleans, and at the airport there was almost nothing to choose from. I think it was three minivans, an SUV, and the fancy upgrade cars that my company won't pay for. I took the SUV.
So, Ben, I've heard that, yeah, the shortage is really bad because a lot of the fleets were sold off to just get them through cash flow. Yeah. But also the prices have gone through the roof. A friend of mine was saying they're going out west this summer and they put in for a rental car and it's $300 a day.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a supply and demand thing. I haven't seen anything that extreme myself, but.
Well, I'm sure they're having to do an SUV because they have a big family.
Right, right. Supply and demand definitely counts here. Of course, the thing with the SUV, three minivans, and nothing else at the one airport contrasts with a few years ago when I arrived at Chicago Midway, and the question was, which Dodge Caravan would you like? Because they had like 20 of those and nothing else.
Wow. So when do you think it's going to rebound, Ben? And more importantly, when should I start buying automotive stock again?
Honestly, yeah. I have no idea when it'll all really be smoothed out. By sometime next year, I would think for sure. But I don't think this year is going to have the crazy year-end deals that you usually see in the past.
Interesting. Okay.
So is anybody getting deals from their dealers?
That would be me. I told you guys, I'm having a huge existential crisis.
Well, that's an excellent segue. So let's shift gears. Thank you, Ben, for the new car smell. And let's shift gears to do In the News with Misty. But first, I'm curious about this existential crisis. Do we need to give you a moment of support and a virtual group hug here? Is that?
I don't know. I don't know what I need. You know, I mean, anybody that's listened to this show for, you know, the past couple months knows the love affair that I have with my 2016 Mazda MX-5.
So nothing has happened to the car, correct?
No. She's fine. But we just paid her off at the end of January. You know, and I love my car. And literally a week ago, I get an envelope, courier delivered, not through the regular postal service, courier delivered from my Mazda dealer. And they're like, hey, how you doing? How you doing? And they're like, you know, hey, we made all these improvements to the MX-5. And, you know, it's usually like 44.8. But if you bring Claudette in, we'll give you 17.5 plus $2,000 for, you know, extra trade in. And because you're a loyal customer, we'll give you another $2,000. And we're even going to include metallic paint because I'm just like, I don't do non-metallic paint. It's a thing. And it has to be red. It has to be red. And so you could drive out in a brand new Mazda MX-5 for $23,500. And I'm like, oh, I just got out of debt. Do I go back into debt or... Do I leave with the one that brung me?
That is a hard
don't
question.
Don't do it.
You've been talking to my husband. Don's been talking to my husband.
I was going to say, should we independently take a small vote, a thing about cars vote amongst the six of us and or the five of us minus you and see what what do you guys? So Don says don't do it. Why not, Don?
Well, first of all, everywhere I'm looking, the prices are crazy. They're not negotiating. And I'm afraid Missy's going to get there and she's going to get all enamored and gluey-eyed and they'll bait and switch her. They'll say, oh, we really don't have that. Definitely not metallic paint. And here's something for $30,000 that you don't want. And yet here's all these other bells and whistles. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. Just look over here. We have never had a good experience with those enticement flyers. My husband had his Dodge Durango from 2016 was totaled in 2017. I mean, literally, that's another story for another time. And we still get those. We would love to trade in your 2016 Dodge Durango there at a premium right now. And here's the great deal. And it's like, it's dead. It's been dead and buried. Or, you know, 3 years, 4 years, whatever. It's, and they know that they put the VIN number on there. They know that, you know, that car is dead.
All right. So Don says
no. Don't do it.
Don is saying a resounding no. Steffi, what do you think? Should she do it?
No, they tried to do the same thing with me when I got a 2012 Civic. It was my first new car. And when it was about 4 years old, I started getting all these things. Oh, come back in. We'll give you a brand new one. And what, you know, and we'll work with you and get the exact car you want and all this stuff. And that was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the car has been totally bulletproof. I mean, I've never even had to put brake pads on the car. I mean, all I've ever done to the car is change the oil. And so I would have given away that 5 years of trouble-free use to somebody else. And when a car's that new, use it up. I mean, these new cars are so reliable. I think it's a bad move unless you really like the new car. And I didn't like the new Civic. So,
yep. And they're not going to have a
red
payment.
One. They're not going to have a red one. They're going to say, here's a gray one. We'll make you deal on that.
Right.
And you'll go, I hate the gray one. So don't even go down there.
So Steffi, another resounding no from Steffi. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I say don't do it too. Not so much for the practical reasons as much. Well, a little bit, but more because, you know, you know the one you have. You love it. You've bonded with it. You know it so well. You know its capabilities. You and it are one on the road. And think how proud you'll be when you do eventually just completely use it up and wear it out.
That's probably the most compelling argument to date.
Excellent, excellent. And
if money doesn't do it for you, sweetie.
I was going to say one more part. Before you reach the point of completely wearing it out, when you've got, I don't know, how many thousand or million kilometers on it, and you can say to people, yep, it's still running and it's running well.
We could be like I have with my Civic and get 300,000 miles on it, put another motor in it, and still own it 25 years later.
There you go.
But you guys will probably be really ashamed of me because she's 5 years old and has 28,000 kilometers on her.
Mm. Dave, what's the verdict from Dave?
So actually, the howling noise you hear behind me is my father's ghost, because he and I have been disagreeing on this my entire life. And to Misty, to your point, the Jeep is a 2008, and I am just about to hit 75,000 miles on it. My dad's philosophy was always have a car payment. And it's, you know, we always had two cars growing up that were on a 2-year staggered cycle. And at the end of 4 years, he would trade that car as soon as it was paid off. And he just viewed it as a cost of doing business. It was a fixed cost. Whereas I really like not having debt. And I think the thing that is different from his mindset and my mindset, apart from the fact he was just wrong, was that what we just talked about is the reliability of cars. It would never have occurred to me that I'd be driving the Jeep almost 13 years after I bought it, but I bonded with it, just like you have with Colette. I've always said the Jeep was the car I should have bought when I was 24 years old. And if there's a good deal out there, my experience of years in business is there's always a good deal out there. It's when you're ready, there'll be somebody who has something pretty that they want to sell you.
There's always going to be someone ready to take your money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Admittedly, car dealers make it really hard to give you their money sometimes.
So, and I Misty, I was going to sit here and I was going to totally take devil's advocate position and tell you why you should trade it in. And I just can't lead you down that path. I can't.
This is why we're friends.
Yeah. Just can't do it. So.
All right.
So
she stays.
Yay.
She stays.
I expect a nice thank you note from her.
Yeah. I'll go take a piece of paper and run over it twice. Mail it to you with her signature.
So I think it's funny that the image that really swayed Misty the most was Ben describing a circumstance where you take your car, you run it till you can't run it anymore, and then you're just both sitting there on the side of the road smoking a cigar.
Yeah. Well, I'm like I said, you know, I've said this plenty of times. I'm just waiting for the borders to open up so I can run to Germany just to get a McRib.
Yep.
Those are the important things in life.
Very cool.
Okay, news. First, I only have three pieces today because they're like pretty in-depth pieces. Okay. The first one is especially for Ben.
Uh-oh.
Thought about you. Our beloved Lotus is sadly phasing out the Elise, the Exegy, the Evora, and the internal combustion engine.
Yep.
Moment of silence. The last internal combustion engine will be in the mid-engine Amira, which is coming to dealerships end of 2022 as a 2023 model. And also, unfortunately for Ben's wallet, will also be sold in the U.S.
Yeah.
There's two versions planned, an inline 4 with an expected 300 horsepower, and the standard V6, which is the Toyota Source 3.5-liter supercharged, currently found in the Exegy and the Evora, which delivers, when it's properly tuned, up to 430 horsepower. Oh. The starting price for the Amira, for the base model, is $75,000 U.S. dollars.
That's a lot.
Going up to about $150,000.
I'm going to need to win the Powerball in any case to get one of those. So.
Yeah.
Somewhere Ben's wife just went, I sense a disturbance in the force.
Probably. Indeed. But in kind of side news, but Lotus is also working on what they call the eSport platform that's aimed at more attainable electric sports cars.
Yeah.
And segueing from more attainable electric sports cars to I only need one kidney, I'm sure. And electric sports cars, there's a Barcelona-based company, of all places, called Balthazar. And they're bringing out a car called the Revolt. I'm not really sure about this name. I'm kind of iffy in it. But it is an electric sports car. It is weighing 770 kilograms, so right at 1,700 pounds. It sports a twin-motor rear-wheel drive, 500 brake horsepower, produces 738 foot-pounds of torque, and it goes from 0 to 62 miles an hour in 2.5 seconds. Has a 700-volt battery, gives you about 350 miles of range, and the charging port, strangely, is found in the dashboard.
Whoa.
But a 5-minute charge will give you 62 miles of power. So provided my math is right, and we all know about me and math. So, you know, it should be conceivable to get a full charge in about 30 minutes or give or take. So it is fully road legal, but it's probably not going to be the most comfortable and or stylish of rides. Most of the interior is carbon fiber, and somebody appears to really have a deep love affair with the F1 seating. It's kind of Spartan inside, but the steering wheel is removable. And with each rear wheel having its very own personal motor, you've got torque vectoring, and the regenerative braking level is adjustable via a dial next to the steering wheel.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It has 4 drive modes, eco, practice, race, and qualifying. Now, they did say if you go like in full out race mode, you got like 40 minutes of battery power. Each one is hand built, which explains the need to donate a kidney because the price point is at $230,000.
Well, if we get syndicated as a car show, maybe one or two of us can afford this kind of thing.
That is really pretty. Except for the inside. The inside, I'm like, dude, and a little bit of creature comfort in there.
Yep. Yeah. Steffi, that is our dream. Our dream is to figure out how to move the thing about cars into more of a video presence and see if we can get on television. But
donate kidneys to buy cars?
Yeah. Because right. I mean, I only got like 2 when I need one.
You have to pick the right car, right?
Or the right kidney.
Or the left one. What's wrong with the left kidney? Nothing wrong with the left kidney. Are you dissing on my left kidney, Dave?
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm sure your kidneys are immaculate. I'm also sure your pancreas is adorable.
My liver, on the other hand, I'm just going to use it as a fanny pack.
Let's go there, right?
Yeah, and the last point, which is kind of a combination of electric sports cars, and we're going to do a special segment on this for our C fans, and everybody's kind of going, that's a strange combination. Yes, it is. We have exciting news from the Little Car Company. And if you don't know of the Little Car Company, they're best known for their Bugatti Baby 2 and their Aston Martin DB5 Junior, which are miniature models of these cars, and they're all electric.
Yeah.
They're collaborating with Tamiya to build an 1/8 scale Wild One Max, which is a dune buggy. It's 3.5 meters or 11.5 feet long, 1.8 meters or 6 foot wide. It's an off-road dune buggy. It weighs 250 kilograms, 550 pounds. And if you're somewhere between 5'3" and 6'5", you can comfortably fit in this.
Oh, good.
It's the second piece. I was like, oh, yeah, that's something for Ben. Thinking of you. It is rear-wheel drive with coilover suspension, a top speed of 30 miles an hour, has a 2-kilowatt-hour power pack, which gives you about a 25-mile range, and it even has a regenerative brake system with hydraulic Brembo discs on each corner.
Wow.
Has 3 drive models, Eco, Novice, and Race, that control things like top speed, throttle mapping, and the interior includes digital gauges and a racing steering wheel. But the best part, and here's where Ben's going to really get excited, and his wife's going to like put like 6 padlocks on the bank account. You can choose to assemble your Max at home.
Ben is completely like running away with this idea. I can see it in his eyes.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to build a car for a while.
Yeah. There's a pretty hefty upgrade catalog with things like bigger batteries, more powerful motor, high performance suspension, 4-point harness. And there's a tarmac pack available that includes road tires and mud flaps and a road legal pack. Now, keep in mind, this is coming out of the UK, so I'm not sure if the road legal pack would apply to the US. Prices starting at about, and you don't have to sell a kidney for this one, about $8,000. And you can reserve your spot at wildonemax.com, with the one being spelled out, for just right around $150. And delivery is expected to start in 2022.
Amazing.
Ah.
Just amazing.
So, yeah, it was kind of an electric sport day today.
The entire world is moving in that direction. It seems like with every week that passes, another company is deciding that they're phasing out their internal combustion engines.
So, you know, and Lotus is looking really heavily with that as well. You know, so
pretty soon it's going to be the thing about old cars.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
Steffi's nodding. Steffi's nodding her head. She's like, yeah, this is true.
The thing about old gas guzzling cars.
Well, yeah. I literally don't have a problem with that as long as it does include like an MP3 player or something. You know, for me, it's less about how the engine goes zoom, but it yeah. needs to audibly go zoom. I think I remember the first time I saw, what was it, the BMW or the i8?
Yeah.
I mean, that thing is gorgeous. I mean, I
you
was
think
just
so?
Like,
I think it looks like a gigantic like, sneaker.
Oh, it was so pretty. And then I was on the A4 between my house and Schiphol, and one went by me, and from the way it looks, you know, and then it went by me, and it went zoom, and I went, oh.
Well, what's going to happen is that the means of motoring is going to change, but motorsporting in itself is also going to adapt. I mean, you speaking for myself, a road trip is still a road trip, right? Still getting in my car is still means getting in my car and rolling down the window, opening the sunroof, and just having a good day, even if I don't have 8 cylinders under the hood that are growling when I want it to, which I will miss, you know, which I will I'd admittedly miss. But the fact of the matter is, you know, what can you do?
It's called an MP3 player because there's literally no, I'm not even kidding. I was looking at a scooter for my son, and there's an Italian brand. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but for like $80 more, you can get an MP3 player, not for you to listen to music, but for it to make sounds. You know,
well, you remember, I think I mentioned in an episode a couple of years ago, one of these accessories that plugs into the 12-volt socket in the car or something that will make, you know, engine noises, and you can select between V8, V12, you know, whatever, all kinds of different noises. Just adapt that technology a little bit so that it's got some sort of input to control the pitch of it. And there you go.
Yeah, just make mine the Schumacher 2004.
Time out. Steffi, say that again.
I said, I'm sorry, that just doesn't. An MP3 player is not going to replace like inline sticks with headers, what they sound like. I mean, it just, I can't go there. That just me personally. We'll just listen to the electric motor whine.
Yeah. For me, it's any port in a storm because I just, you know. And maybe we could take like the PlayStation like Rumble Shock and put it under the seat so you could at least get the feel of it.
I just want to leave nuns gaping at me in the distance. That's all. That's
and we're back.
You were so close. It was seconds away.
I'm sitting there going, do I really want to go there? But leave the
nuns. You were there.
If the nuns are shocked at what I do in a car, then I've done my job.
It's people like you that caused the Reformation.
I mean, don't some new cars have like engine sounds piped through the stereo system to like simulate that the motor actually sounds good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't like cars creeping up on me. That's the problem with the electric car. Just all of a sudden you're driving along and you're like, where'd you come from? Or you're sitting there at a light and you're waiting to turn and you're like, oh, where'd you come from? It scares you. There's something.
My partner's last car was an Escape hybrid. And it was kind of cool when it was running on electric. It was very, very quiet. He got really into hypermiling through the city to the point that I was ready to kill him because he was frequently going 20 miles below the speed limit. The thing, though, with the super quiet car is it was a quirky, wonky car. And occasionally it would just shut itself down. And you didn't know for a while. Because you were coasting along and there was no sound difference, you know, whereas combustion engine, if it stops, you've got a pretty good indication. Whereas the electric one, why am I slowing down? And especially as the passenger, I'm like, oh God, why is he hypermiling on the interstate?
Friday, I had to run into town. First, I had to sign a paper asking for Dutch citizenship and promising that I wasn't a danger to public order and safety.
Oh, good thing they didn't ask us.
Yeah, right. But I needed to run to the sewing store to pick up some stuff. And like one of the owner's husband was like parked right in front of the store in his Prius. And I'm standing there going, are you going? Are you moving? Because I would like to go into the store. And if I step in front of you, I really don't want to be a grease spot on these cobblestones. And that's, for me, is the biggest problem with electric cars.
Well,
fortunately, with the Prius, you probably could have put your foot on the bumper and stopped it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm little. I'm only like 5'1".
I think you still should have been able to stop that car.
It's not really anything new with electrics, though. One day in 1988 in Germany, I did almost get run over by an escort that just didn't make a lot of sound.
Well, time's changing. We'll just have to figure out how to increase our awareness, and hopefully none of us will get run over before that happens. Let's thank you, Misty. Good stuff for being for the In the News segment. Let's answer our grand trivia auto question and then wrap the show. The question sent by our friend Mark is, which country has a coast-to-coast Highway 66? And our choices are Italy, England, Finland, and Japan. Steffi, you want to take the first guess?
We'll go three. I have no idea.
Three. So three in this case would have been Finland. That's the guess.
That's a good idea.
Ben, what do you think?
With completely nothing to go on, I'm thinking Italy.
You're thinking Italy. Dave, how about you?
I'll take England.
You'll take England for any reason at all?
No reason at all. And just round out.
Right. And Dawn, what do you think?
You know, before Ben said it, I was thinking Italy too. I have nothing to go on.
All right. So we got one for Finland, two for Italy, one for England. Misty, what do you think?
I've been to Italy, so I'm saying Japan.
You're saying Japan, right. And so I like the idea that it should be an island, right? Coast to coast seems like it's achievable on a smaller island. Of course, Italy is also surrounded sort of by ocean. But the answer is, in fact, England. Well done, Dave. So England has a coast to coast Highway 66. And thank you to our friend Mark Rosen for supplying the trivia question. If you, as our listeners, have trivia questions that we could try to stump our panel with, please send them to us via our Facebook page. The Thing About Cars on Facebook is searchable there. You should be able to find us, or via our webpage. That's thethingaboutcars.com. Steffi, it's been a real joy having you at the microphone with us today. I hope you will join us again for another show in the future, maybe love multiple shows. And whenever you're ready, let's go do the car show thing or take your car to Mexico and see what happens.
There we go. Like I said, just make sure you're in Mexico, not in the U.S., right?
Right. Exactly. Very cool. And that's it for this episode of The Thing About Cars. Please rate us on Apple Podcast or Google Podcast or wherever you hear the show. Your ratings help us become more searchable and more discoverable by other car people. And we hope you and yours are staying safe out there. We'll see you on the road. Take care, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.
Later.
Listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.